Lord God, be with us today as we hear and receive your word. Inspire us, mold us, so that we may go into the world to spread the good news of Jesus Christ. Amen. When I was in junior high school, a long, long, long time ago, I remember very clearly reading a book by Alan Paton called Cry the Beloved Country. Did anybody know that book? Okay, well, you'll learn about it today. It's written about South Africa during apartheid, and the book follows a black pastor named Stephen Kumato. He relates the challenges, the repercussions, the human depravity that policy embraced of apartheid. Stephen deals with horrible family challenges, his son wrongly convicted and hung, betrayals, violence, all other sorts of issues. Something awakens in him because he is aided and befriended by some very unlikely people. There are people who want to take a stand for justice and peace, for tolerance and change, and the value of life of every human being. At the end of the book, after all of these horrors have happened, he goes to a mountain to pray. It's the day his son is being hung. He prays for strength. But most of all, he gives thanks. He gives thanks for those who along the way have stepped up and made some difference or made changes in their lives where they could help others and refute this policy that had been there for decades. He also wonders if things will ever change. He prays so, but he wonders. In today's gospel, Jesus might have had some similar thoughts, for as we all read, Jesus apparently depended on local hospitality during his entire time while he was in ministry on earth. And now he finds, as he's heading to Jerusalem, he plans to take the short route to go from Galilee to Judea through Samaritan country rather than take the longer way around. Seems like a good idea, right? However, when the disciples whom he sends ahead to arrange for their stay are rebuffed, which shouldn't have been too surprising considering the age-old hostility between Samaritans and Jews, John and James became so angry that they wanted to call down fire from heaven to burn up these inhospitable, mean-spirited folks. It's as if they had been deaf during the times that Jesus had preached love and forgiveness of one's enemies. So what we have is a sharp contrast to two reactions to hostility. One says, we have the power to smite them. Let's do that, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And the other, in effect, says, haven't you been paying attention? Love, respect, concern, care. That's how we're to live. This is what Jesus preached and taught time after time after time in challenging, difficult circumstances, time after time after time. Broke the norms. Will people ever learn? Will people ever change? In the film Invictus, anybody saw that Nelson Mandela movie? Beautifully played by Morgan Freeman. Almost a commercial here. Mandela, of course, was the leader of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, and he takes a very different approach to his enemies. He had 27 years of imprisonment to figure out what would happen if he ever got free. What could he do? How could he change things? He loves his country. It was his beloved country. He had refused to sign a pledge to give up violence unless the government also made a similar pledge. When he was elected president a few years later after miraculously being released, he refused to go along with his followers' dreams, and desires, to get even with their former oppressors. He was wise. He was patriotic enough to know that if his country was to emerge from the horrors of its racist past, that reconciliation, not revenge, was needed. Wounds could therefore be healed. Among the first to see this policy of reconciliation implemented were the members of his presidential staff that he had inherited and the team of bodyguards that had protected him. Assembling the staff, blacks, whites, with layers and layers of tension in the room, Mandela tells them that any white person willing to work for him would be welcome to keep their job. His bodyguards would now include members of this old white security team. His black guards, the one that had stood by him forever, predictably were very upset by this. One of them pointing out that some of these people that he was now having to be on staff were probably the same ones who had beaten and tortured them while they were in prison years ago. Mandela says, yes, but they will have to learn to work together. And it would be a slow process, but it was what was needed. They don't agree necessarily, but it's him talking. And so they do it. At some point, he hears over the radio that the new Sports Federation committee is meeting to displace the white rugby football team, and even the old colors and the name Springboks. Mandela drops what he's doing instantly and rushes to the meeting hall. The members have just voted to do that, just that. All hating the team because of its association with the white Boers, who were, of course, the former ruling party. His entrance is greeted with great enthusiasm. Oh, Mandela is here. He'll approve of what we've done. He'll understand. But no. When he speaks, he rebukes them. The mood in the room becomes very tense. He asks them to rescind their action, because it will drive another wedge of hostility between the races. What is needed now, he tells them, is for the two sides to come together. If both whites and blacks will support and root for the Springboks, this can be the beginning of a reconciliation. We all know how we love our sports teams. You get everybody to agree to support the teams, not the other. That's what happens. And so very reluctantly, they agree to take back their actions. The Springbok name will remain. The green colors will remain. Obviously, they do this more because it is Nelson Mandela asking them than because of they agree with his view. Mandela next sends an invitation to François Pinault to meet him at his office. François is the team captain. The team is really not very popular at this stage because they're losing a lot of games, so they'd fired the coach. And it turns out that it's South Africa's team to host the tournaments to see who gets in the finals for the World Cup. And no one right now expects them to advance very far, including themselves. So Francoise is perplexed by the president's invitation, and his racist father, as he leaves the house, makes some disparaging marks about Mandela. Nonetheless, Francoise goes, shows up. Mandela greets him warmly, serving the tea and the refreshments himself. No pomp and circumstance, just man to man. Mandela discusses the nature of leadership and the upcoming World Games. He tells his guest of the poem Invictus that had kept his hope alive for 27 years while he was imprisoned. Out of the night that covers me, black is the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloody, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. You can see the wheels turning in Francois's head. He leaves the meeting with a newfound respect and admiration for the man his father had so disparaged. As the movie progresses, Nelson keeps in touch with the team, with Francois's. Brexit drops in on team practices, had studied the team and photos enough that the first time he meets them, he greets them all, shakes their hand, and calls them by name, giving them respect. Obviously inspired by their president and probably by their captain, the team begins a winning streak. The team visits the jail on Robben Island, where Mandela had been held for so long, and in a very moving scene, Francois stays behind to measure the room. He walks it off, imagining the president reading that poem. Still, when Francois suggested that they sing together the black national anthem, the white members refused. They mellow, however, as they continue to win, and Mandela continues to show up for all their games, support for what they're doing. One time a team member gives Mandela a Springbok team cap. We wonder through the next time when he'll eventually wear it, and he wears it, of course, at the World Games, the World Match Game. Well, you know, we're building to this point where there's a very climactic ending in this movie. It's all in sports genres. They need this final big play. The camera takes in not only the playing field where the Springboks of both races are trying very hard, but also to the stands where Mandela and the staff are all cheering and clapping and applauding, yay, yay, yay. And even to the street outside where there's a touching, very touching little scene that shows the effect of Mandela's policy of reconciliation. Because it's a black street kid who feigns disinterest, but he keeps creeping closer and closer to a police car where the officers are listening on the radio to the game. He edges a little bit closer, and one of the policemen shoo him away, but then there's a lot of applause, so the cop turns back to the radio, and the little boy moves a little closer. By the end, as the little boy is accepted by the white policeman, is together, they cheer, applaud, go dance in circles, because they're exchanging their congratulations for the Springboks' victory, which means, of course, they will then proceed to the World Cup. Well, we all know that things don't happen overnight. And South Africa certainly has not become totally free from all of the prejudice and hurt and pain and so forth that they went through. But South Africa is a long, long way from where they could have been. It's in a much better place because of Mandela's policy. His moving them in the right direction, his refusal to cling to resentment over past wrongs. He set up those trials of reconciliation where victims and prosecutors and accusers could come together and have some words. They didn't have enough prisons, was one of the reasons these were developed. They didn't have enough prisons to put everybody in who had offended, who had done something dastardly. But nonetheless, it was a process of healing. He opted for a positive, we can do this policy, reaching out his hand of friendship to old enemies. He must have known a lot about Jesus. He sided with Jesus and not with angry disciples. We all know that life is about choices, big and little. It's about priorities, about how we spend our time, our money, our efforts, our relationship currency. That reading from Galatians today, you should keep that close. It's really pretty simple, you'd think. Put it up on your bathroom mirror or post it on your Facebook. I don't care what you do with it, but pay attention to it. It's good. What he's talking about is saying, don't sweat the small stuff, Jesus is saying. Keep the focus on love, on care, on concern, on standing tall for God's world. And this is all from following Jesus, the man who, while on this earth, had no place to lay his head. And he's saying, follow me. Don't worry about where the head needs to be. For ultimately, we too decide. We get to decide every single day who is the captain of our souls.